Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by one of the top voices in college basketball. We welcome on Jeff Goodman. He is with the Field of 68. Jeff, happy to have you join us today.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing fantastic, Jeff. Let's just start with this. I have not seen your poll yet, so maybe you have KU at number one. Maybe you have another team. But as we are entering the season, who do you have as the top team in college basketball?
Yeah, I've said I have Kansas number one. To be honest, I think Alabama's roster is probably a little bit better, but because of the Hall of Famer that's been coaching, and that's no disrespect to Nate Oates, who's done a great job at Alabama, but last I checked, he isn't Bill Self. So I have given Kansas the edge slightly, but I do think Alabama, boy, I don't know. I mean, they're loaded. Their second five could be, if you put them in there, they'd probably be ranked somewhere in the top 25. Their second five's that good. When they get healthy.
Jeff, how have you seen KU regroup and kind of change their roster over the course of the last couple of months? Last year's KU team certainly wasn't one of your typical teams. They seemed a little bit thin in areas, didn't have the depth. They have gone in the portal, they have gone with NIL, and they have changed this team a lot. For fans that maybe didn't keep up with this offseason and all the moves, how has KU been able to regroup and sort of rebuild that roster on the fly?
Yeah, I thought they did a poor job a year ago, to be honest, of depth, you know, and I just didn't quite understand it. Because to me, again, you've been doing this a long time. You know, Bill Self, Norm Roberts, Curtis Townsend, all those guys have been doing it a long time, and I just thought they left themselves painfully short when you got to be able to sustain injuries. And they were thin already, and then McCullough and Dickinson both suffered significant injuries towards the end of the year, and that was it. Like, it was almost like no Moss, like you throw in the towel and you had no chance. So they went out there and that was the first thing, right? Get depth, get 10 deep. And they've done that this year and they've addressed their two biggest issues, three biggest, with depth being number one, number two being perimeter shooting. Last year they brought in Nick Timberlake. He couldn't make a shot. The Townsend transfer. This year they're like, okay, you know what? We're not going to put all our eggs in one basket. We're going to get two shooters. We're going to get, you know, Lawrence's own Zeke Mayo from South Dakota State, who can really shoot it, combo guard. And we're going to go get Rylan Griffin from Alabama, a little bit longer, who can also shoot it. So one of them will be on the court at all times to give spacing. Then we're going to go get A.J. Storr, who, you know, listen, he's going to be the wild card of this team. You know, he's going to be the wild card coming over, you know, from Wisconsin. And he's a guy who can break it down a little bit, but Bill Self, you could see, is already, you know, a little frustrated with what he's given him or not given him. You know, he told me he should be one of the best rebounders in the team and hasn't been that yet. And then you bring in the freshman. Like, Flory Badunga is a kid that if they didn't have Hunter Dickinson, I'm surprised he went to Kansas in a way. I thought he could have played 30 minutes somewhere else. He's an animal. I mean, he plays that hard. And he's undersized, but he's long. And he's not the most skilled dude in the world, but, man, does he play, again, just so hard. And then Marquise Passmore, one of the best perimeter. You know, he can be an elite perimeter defender. So they've got everything now. They fit together. And Zach Clements, who I thought should have come out of his red shirt last year, I don't understand why he didn't. He's going to play this year. He could have played 20 minutes last year. And instead, he's going to play like 8 minutes this year, I would think. So that one baffled me. But they've got a lot of weapons, guys. A lot of weapons, a lot of depth. Yeah, the biggest surprise was they played the kid David Coit from Northern Illinois, the transfer. He played like 20 minutes the other night.
Right now, we're talking to Jeff Goodman. He is with the Field of 68. We're taking a closer look at KU in their game against North Carolina coming up tomorrow at the Fieldhouse. Jeff, how cool is it now, and maybe this is just, you know, times are changing in college basketball, that these games are now on campus. Last year, KU hosted UConn at Allen Fieldhouse. They're now playing North Carolina at Allen Fieldhouse. I'm all for the neutral site games, but you and I both know there's something different playing this on campus in front of college students. How cool is it that both of these programs have agreed to even play a game like this?
No, it's awesome, and we need more of it, especially in the first week. I've been a proponent of, like, this needs to happen where, you know, maybe it's a rotation where you have 10, 12 programs, and they each play, you know, every other year. You know, I don't know, maybe it's a two-year deal. You know, Kansas plays for 2 years, Carolina, you know, home and home. That first week of the season, same thing with Duke, you know, and they rotate, right? Duke, Carolina, Kansas, Alabama, UConn, you have like 10 or 12 teams, and they're all, to me, you should have a big boy game tonight. We got nothing. There's nothing on tonight. Zero. Now, I know it's Thursday night football. I get it. But to me, you could still have one college hoops game that starts up at, I don't know, what time's the NFL game today? I think it's like 8:15, maybe, Eastern time.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Right. You could start a game at 7. You could start a game at 7. You could start it at 9:30 if you needed to, and not completely coincide with Thursday night football. But, you know, to me, again, I love these games. The game, I wish I was going to be there Friday night. I'm not. I will see Kansas. Part of the reason I'm not going is because I'm going to see Kansas against Michigan State, you know, on Tuesday, next Tuesday in Atlanta at Champions Classic, of which Duke and Kentucky will play in the other matchup. So I get a little more bang for my buck. But, yeah, it's 1,000 times better watching a game at, you know, Fog Allen, in Chapel Hill, at Cameron, at Rupp, at all those places, Breslin, Michigan State, wherever you – there, it's 1,000 times better than these neutral site camps.
Jeff, this is a side point, I guess, but you would be able to answer this question. Why doesn't college basketball still do that 24-hour thing? I feel like college basketball had something that was pretty unique and kind of their own, where, you know, the NFL makes opening week a big deal. We know that the defending Super Bowl champion is going to play that Thursday. Baseball has opening day with all of his pageantry. I felt like college basketball had that kind of event to kick off the season, and it just went away for whatever reason.
No idea. And I was at ESPN. I never got a straight answer on that one of why they're not doing it anymore. But I will tell you this, and we won't be able to do it with the same way that ESPN did it, but we just, Field of 68, we started the season the other day in Sioux Falls at the Pentagon in South Dakota with three really good mid-major games, right? Charleston, Southern Illinois, St. Louis, Santa Clara. Then we ended it with McNeese State and South Dakota State. Next year, I want to do the marathon again on Field of 68. I want to do 9 games, bounce around the country. May not be everyone at a home site, but I want to do something where there's 9 games all day. And you know what? At least we can do something. And to be honest, I think if we do it at Field of 68, then maybe ESPN says, you know what? Maybe we need to do it again. You know, and if that has to happen, if we do it to basically get bought out of it, it's good for the sport.
Right now, we're talking to Jeff Goodman here for a couple more minutes, getting his thoughts on college basketball. I've got one North Carolina question to ask you, and then I guess big picture. Tell us a little bit more about this North Carolina team. I can't believe that RJ Davis is still in school. Maybe I'm just getting to the point that it's just surprising that guys stay 4 or 5 years of college basketball. I know that Carolina is a top 10 team, just hard to really pick any team to go inside Allen Fieldhouse and win. Tell us a little bit about more about North Carolina and what you think their chances are this season.
Well, they got an elite backcourt. RJ, obviously, maybe the best player in the country. I would say RJ and Hunter Dickinson are maybe, with Cooper Flagg, the Duke freshman, like 1A, B, and C for National Player of the Year. I mean, Mark Sears in there, too. It's kind of wide open. RJ's terrific. Elliott Cadeau has been the biggest difference for them. He was a reclassified freshman a year ago. An elite pass-first point guard who struggled last year, and he struggled to really shoot it. And I talked to Hubert Davis a few weeks ago. He said, this is going to be a different player. And sure enough, first game, I think he made 3 or 4 threes. So their backcourt's going to carry him. The big question is in the front court. Well-traveled veteran Jalen Withers plays the four. He's fine. He's talented. He's never quite lived up to the potential. And then you got Jalen Washington, who's kind of a string bean. At the five, they got another kid who transferred in from Vandy, Van Allen Lubin up front. I guess what I'm trying to say is up front is their biggest weakness, and that's obviously Kansas's biggest strength with Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adams. So, you know, Kansas can punish him on the glass. They can punish him in the post. Can he foul out a couple of those guys? Potentially, that's where Kansas, they got to go old school if I'm Bill Self and really pound the ball down low to Hunter early and often. And see if he can really take advantage. But, again, it's going to be the backcourt. Can they slow down Carolina? They're going to want to run the Tar Heels. They don't play traditional like they did with, you know, two bigs. They don't even have a true big. So the big question is going to be, again, defensively, you know, DeJuan and some of those other guards, you know, Zeke Mayo probably in particular, can they slow down Cadeau and RJ Davis?
Last question here. We're talking to Jeff Goodman. I've seen him play a little bit. I'm pretty familiar with him, but I'm not sure if the average college basketball
He's
is
awesome.
Familiar
He's
with
him. He's awesome. With, I know who you're asking, but
yeah,
he is awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because so I listened to the Bill Simmons podcast, and he said that he believes that Cooper Flagg is the best freshman we've seen in college basketball since Kevin Durant. That is
He's probably
big
never
statement.
Seen him. I mean, listen, Bill Simmons has probably never seen Cooper Flagg play. I guarantee he's never seen him play, in fact. So, like that hyperbole is ridiculous.
Okay, so I'm asking you because you have seen him play in person.
Yeah.
How good is Cooper Flagg?
You know, we'll see, and that's where these people make these crazy predictions, and then when they turn out right, they say, I told you so. Like, come on, man. Like, again, Cooper Flagg is a very unique player with a unique skill set. You know, you look at him and you're like, oh, man, you know, 6'8", 6'9", white kid, he's going to shoot the hell out of it. That's actually probably his biggest weakness. His biggest strength is his court vision, his passing ability. He can get to the basket. He's an elite shot blocker, elite. Like, he'll block shots closing out on the perimeter. He'll block shots in the post. He can run the floor. He makes people better. He fills up the stat sheet. He's just not a guy who's going to go for 25 or 30 very often. His stat line is probably going to be what it was game one, which was like 18 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. A steal, maybe a block, a couple blocks. Like, he just, man, he's fun to watch, and he'll be fun to be hated by everybody that either isn't a fan of Duke or isn't from Maine, because that's where he hails from.
That is Jeff Goodman joining us on the show. He does fantastic work with Field of 68. Jeff, we got to have you back on as the college basketball season comes together. We got at least two interesting local stories. We got Kansas and K-State. We don't got to talk anything about Missouri. They're terrible.
They are bad. They are bad, unfortunately. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. That is Jeff Goodman joining us on the show today. I'd love to talk some Missouri basketball with Jeff Goodman. I'm not here into wasting people's time. Rob, let's react to what he said about Cooper Flagg on the other side, and we'll get back to the NFL. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's spend a little bit of time talking college basketball, and I do want to get back to the NFL, so indulge me just a little bit. I hope that this starts to happen more because of name, image, and likeness. And certainly making high school players now go to college basketball and giving them a little bit of money with the NIL, I think is going to avoid some of the things that have happened over the last 5 years or so where LaMelo didn't play college basketball. Remember that kid that was going to go to KU, RJ Hampton? Like, we've seen a handful of these guys that either just outright don't go play college basketball or they go to overtime elite or some of those other things. But, I mean, if KU can pay you $1 million in some school in overtime elite, it is much better for you as a brand to go play basketball at Kansas for a year than go to overtime elite. It's been a little bit since we've had a college basketball prospect like Cooper Flagg that I think is pretty interesting and at least makes you want to watch. Now, Rob, I would say that you and I are on the hardcore side of it. We keep up with high school recruiting and watch the high school mixtape, so we kind of have an idea of who he is. I do wonder, is he a big enough name and has he crossed over to the point where I think the casual fan knows who he is? I think that he has in a lot of ways. This feels a little bit like Trae Young. This feels a little bit to me like Zion. I don't think he's the phenomenon that Zion was, but I think the casual college basketball fan knows who Cooper Flagg is and is very interested in watching him play. So I am excited for next Tuesday when we get to the Champions Classic. We get the KU-Michigan State doubleheader, and then we also get to see what they are telling me is an elite college basketball prospect in Cooper Flagg. And you know I say this all the time, that college basketball just doesn't have heroes and villains anymore. And when you kind of remove that story from things, college basketball has just become a less interesting product to me. This kid Cooper Flagg has a chance to be that hero or villain this year, and at least a player that would get you to tune into a regular season college basketball game. There hasn't been a lot of men's basketball players that have done that of late. Is he a guy that will get you to watch a November, December college basketball game? America's going to tune into the NCAA tournament. No one's arguing that. But is he good enough to get you to watch a January college basketball game? There haven't been many college basketball players in the last 5 years that I think fit that criteria.
I think he will cross over, but I think a lot of his crossover is going to be the name across the front of his chest. Let's be honest. Duke is one of those brands that everyone seems to hate. Unless you are a Duke fan, you hate Duke. Carrington, you're a Mizzou fan. You feel no way about Duke. But when Coach K lost his last game, you got your jokes off. You're thrilled.
Just pumped.
We all hated J.J. Redick as kids. Boy, if you're of an older generation, you hated Christian Laettner. We can name the Duke villains. Cooper Flagg has that villain mentality because he's going to be good, he's going to be a problem, and he's going to be doing it with Duke across the front of his chest. And because of that, he is going to be on ESPN. He's going to be on CBS. He is going to be front and center, and I think he will grab fans because Duke has the Champions Classic Tuesday. They also have, what, the ACC Big Ten whatever thing.
They also play Kansas next week,
They also play Kansas.
Next Saturday, right?
It's 2 weeks.
Okay, 2 weeks. Okay.
In Vegas. I'm off a little bit. In Vegas on a Saturday night. Like, up against a mediocre college football weekend. Like, so Cooper Flagg is going to be seen a lot in November on big-time games. And then it will carry over. And you know how Duke is always on TV. People will learn to hate Cooper Flagg, and he's good. The scouting report that Jeff Goodman just said, hey, he's going to block shots. He can close out and make blocks on perimeter shots. Sent a chill down my spine. Last time I saw a guy do that in college was Anthony Davis, who was doing it to Kansas. But if he's good like that and he's at Duke, he will be hated like that.
So I want to keep with the heroes and villain theme, and let's kind of get back to talking about the NFL. I was talking to one of my good friends, and he is a big Broncos fan. So you can imagine he hates Patrick Mahomes. It's all in like sports. You guys know the feeling, but the same way that you feel about Peyton Manning, or at least used to feel about Peyton Manning, and the way that you used to feel about John Elway or Phillip Rivers, that's the way he feels about Patrick Mahomes. Cannot stand Patrick Mahomes. So whenever the Chiefs win, we kind of have like some fun banter. Oh, I knew they were going to do this. You know, basically all the things that kind of opposing teams fans say about Patrick Mahomes. That's our conversations on a football Sunday. So we were talking about this on Monday Night Football when the Bucks made the decision to kick the extra point. My friend then texted me and said, I'm going to bed. I know how this game is going to end. The Chiefs are going to win. I was like, yeah, probably. You kind of knew that going in. And Rob, I wrote this down early in the week, and I'm prepared to tell you this. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because you are a fan of this kind of genre. Haven't the Chiefs just become a superhero movie? You love Spider-Man, right? You love Batman. Aren't all Chiefs games basically the same arc of any of those kind of movies? You're introduced to the main character early on, right? We then meet the love interest. They show them up in the stands. We get to meet Mary Jane. We get to meet whoever Batman is dating at the time. It's great. We get to learn a little bit of their backstory. As the movie goes on, the hero faces a little bit of adversity. It's a little bit back and forth. You're sitting there wondering, man, I'm not sure. How is Batman going to get out of this, man? Joker's been causing mayhem this entire movie. How is Batman going to win? How is he going to stop the Riddler in this movie? I don't know how he's going to do it. And then in the third act of the movie, doesn't Spider-Man always figure it out? Spider-Man figures it out. Spider-Man gets the girl at the end of the movie. You leave the theater all happy, and then they repeat the process again, and you give them another $200 billion for them to continue doing it. Isn't that basically what Chiefs games have come into? Every Chiefs game this season has been the exact same game. Early on, the Chiefs are playing all right. They show Taylor Swift in the stands. Everybody gets all excited about it. In the third quarter, there's a little bit of tension. You're sitting there wondering, is this going to be the week? Hey, what's going to happen to Iron Man? I don't know what's going to happen to Iron Man. Iron Man then wins. You stand up and cheer. Everybody is happy. And you go back to see the exact same movie next week because the movie makes you feel good. Isn't that what every single Chiefs game has been? We are just watching Spider-Man every single week. It's great. It's incredible. I love No Way Home. I wish they keep making Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. That's who Patrick Mahomes is. He's a superhero now.
I mean, first off, good news. Tom Holland is returning as Spider-Man. So you're going to get more Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. He's giving you what you want. But that is a fascinating and accurate portrayal of Chiefs games this season. I go into superhero movies now, and I'm talking about like the regular ones, not the Avengers or the super big ones where like they do have more twists and turns. You go see Spider-Man, you go see Iron Man, you go see Thor, and I kind of know the outcome going in, but I want to see the journey it takes me on. Does it keep me engaged when I know at the back end, oh, so-and-so's gonna win? That's kind of how Chiefs games feel. They find new and exciting ways to get it done. The Ravens couldn't score in the final moment. Oh, just eked out the victory.
Yeah, and then you think about it, though, the ending is always a little bit different.
But to also the same at the same time.
To your point, week one, foot was on the line. We're sitting there, oh, man, the Ravens almost had them that time. We'll see how next week's story is. We're all questioning whether or not Tampa Bay should have went for it. We then had the puppet episode. Oh, man, hey, they made the Chiefs really, really mad in this one. I wonder what the Chiefs are going to do. It ended up being really close at the end, and then the Chiefs made one or two plays in the final quarter of the game. That's what it is. Every single Chiefs game is its own individual movie that always ends the same with the good guy winning at the end. Every single one.
Also, to that same point, like if we're going to get into the niche and the semantics of this, sometimes the superhero struggles. He loses out. He takes an L in battle one. You know what he does? He usually adds a super friend.
100%. They always get a teammate.
Hey, what has happened? What do we talk about all season with the Chiefs other than the winning? You know, they really could use a receiver. Their receiver room is down. They took an L in the first battle. And now, lo and behold, they've added a super friend, and DeAndre Hopkins has them hitting a new stride.
They do always kind of have this point in a superhero movie, too, where they, like, lose their powers for just a little bit. And then you're like, man, Batman's kind of down right now. Come on, Batman. Like, you got to pick yourself up here. What's going on, Batman? You got to be better. Batman, you got to be a better individual. You got to be a better human being than you've been so far. Come on, Batman. Pick it up. We do this every single game. That idea just hit me when I was talking to my friend, the Chiefs. They have just become a superhero. Someone said it sounds like an episode of Scooby-Doo. I actually think that's an incredible analogy. That is basically what happens every single Chiefs game. We know who the villain is. You kind of question who it is. There's some capers along the way. And then at the end, it's like, oh, man, it was Mr. Johnson. I should have saw this coming the entire time. No, that is absolutely what happens. We're going to head to Denver, Colorado here coming up in a bit to learn a little bit more about the Broncos as we head into Sunday's game against them, taking a look at the standings right now in the AFC. If the playoffs started today, the Denver Broncos would be in the postseason. Now, you guys might find this hard to believe, but there are seven teams that are above 500 in the AFC. All of them obviously are in the postseason as of right now. Denver is one of those teams that is over 500. They are 5-4. They're one game back of the Los Angeles Chargers. They actually lost to the Chargers earlier in the season. And if the season ended today, Baltimore would be a wild card team. They are 6-3. We'll talk more about Thursday Night Football here coming up in just a little bit. Getting you ready for the matchup later today where Cincinnati travels to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. But let's head to the phone lines right now to take our first look at the Denver Broncos. Our dear friend of the show, Josh Dover, joins us on the show. He's with Denver Sports 104.3. Josh, man, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Carrington, coming off of a beatdown in Baltimore. But Bo Nix seems to be like he's on his way to being the real deal, so feeling pretty good in Broncos country.
All right, well then let's start with the conversation about Bo Nix. How are you guys feeling about your quarterback? You know, you guys have been without a quarterback, it feels like, for almost a decade now, but maybe you got one that you actually like.
Yeah, I definitely do have one the fans like, the media's starting to like, and it has been a decade. You can take that probably off that statement. It's been a decade, and it started slow. We've been talking about it on my show, a little struggle, improve, excel, and that's exactly what Bo has done, man. He had to settle in a little bit. There's still a lot of work that he can do. He needs some help around him because the Broncos roster is void of playmakers, but he's starting to figure it out. He's starting to work all parts of the field, which he didn't do. His feet are starting to settle under him and thrown off of a platform instead of trying to trust his arm a little bit more. So the kid's got a lot of work to do. But for the first time in a decade, it feels like they found their guy at quarterback.
I have this question. I imagine a lot of other people have this question. I do wonder how real the Broncos are. Now, I think we do this every single season where we kind of poke holes in a team resume. But then it's like, wait, there's not that many good teams in the league. So unless you're beating Kansas City or Detroit, everybody's going to question your schedule. They do have one good win this season. They went on the road and they beat Tampa Bay. But since then, they have beaten the Jets, the Raiders, the Saints without Derek Carr, and they beat Carolina. And they've played a couple of good teams and they lost. They lost to Seattle. They lost to Pittsburgh. They lost to Baltimore, and now they got this game coming up against Kansas City. How real do you think the Broncos are?
That's been a fun topic out here because you win a couple, Bo looks kind of good, and fans start to go a little bit crazy and talk about the playoffs and what it could be this year. But I don't believe that they're real, and especially when you talk about the teams you're talking about with you guys in Kansas City, with Buffalo, with some of the Baltimores, which obviously we just saw that litmus test and they failed. So they're not real as far as that goes. But look, I mean, you know it, Carrington, you and I have been talking for a long time. We're beggars out here in Denver. You can't be choosers as to when you're real. So they're on a real path for the first time. There's light at the end of the Broncos tunnel for the first time in a decade. So that part of it is real. But as far as them being a contender or anything like that this year, that's not real at all. That is definitely not real. And there would be, you know, if they get to a chance where they're in a wild card, because right now it looks like the AFC is going to be wide open for that last spot, or those couple last spots. I mean, there'd be a team like the Bills or the Chiefs or those Ravens if they had to play wild card weekend that would be licking their chops to play a team like the Broncos. So they're not real as far as that goes, but they're on a real path for the first time in 10 years.
And Josh, that makes a lot of sense. It does kind of feel to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that every year there's one or two teams that end up making the postseason. You kind of look back and you think, man, how did they do that? I kind of feel like that team's going to be the Broncos. I would say that the wild card picture is maybe a little softer than people had anticipated. The Jets aren't very good this year. Cincinnati doesn't appear to be this good this year. I mean, seven teams have to make it, and it seems kind of hard to create a seven-team playoff in the AFC and not include the Denver Broncos, or at least have them barely missing the postseason.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's kind of what they're hanging their hat on right now, because you look at what they have, obviously losing Baltimore. Everybody's looking at this Chiefs game as a tough one, as they should. Come home and get Atlanta, which will be difficult. But then you got teams like Cleveland, Indianapolis, the Chargers in there once again, whose defense is good, but the team is still struggling. So there's a path for them to be at 9, and maybe if you catch a couple green lights, flirt with that 10th win. But again, it's some false hope. It would be much better than anything has been since Super Bowl 50, but it wouldn't be, oh, well, they made the playoff, now watch out for the Denver Broncos. It would be, wow, they might be a couple of months, a year ahead of schedule with where Bo Nix and Sean Payton are.
It is interesting because they're now in a stretch. So they got blown out by the Baltimore Ravens. They were super aggressive on fourth down, and I think that's a big reason of how that game kind of got out of control. They have the road game against Kansas City, and then they play Atlanta next week. Like, I feel like all of the questions we have about the Denver Broncos, it's going to be answered in the next 10 days.
You're right. You're absolutely right, because they failed that Baltimore test in a very, very big way. You're going to go get Kansas City undefeated, Super Bowl champs, everything that comes with the Chiefs. I know, because you always tell me about it, Carrington. It is a big test. And then Atlanta, you kind of looked at, like, who are they? But they're starting to figure themselves out. So I think what you're going to see over these next 10 days is kind of what we were talking about earlier. Like, all right, the Broncos have an opportunity here. They're showing that they're taking some steps in the right direction, but they're not big enough leaps and bounds. They're these small little baby steps, almost even like an army crawl, because they'll show some good in a game and then go right back to the bad. And last week they did that in the first and second half with Baltimore. So I think we'll know who they are in 10 days. I already know who they are. They're a young football team that has no playmakers around a quarterback that still has to figure some stuff out, that's carried by a really, really good defense. That's who they are right now. That's who they're going to be in 10 days. And then that's who they're going to be until next offseason, where they have a little bit more money, all their draft picks for the first time in what feels like 5 years, and can start to add some talent around their young quarterback.
So we were having this question, and right now we're talking to Josh Dover of Denver Sports 104.3, talking about, I would say, one of the surprise teams and stories in the NFL are the Broncos. Josh, I think some Chiefs fans are potentially looking at this as being a trap game. Do you think it's possible for a trap game to be a divisional game? Because looking at it through the Kansas City lens, they played Monday Night Football against Tampa Bay, and they play the Buffalo Bills next week. And then sandwiched right there in the middle is a Denver Broncos team. If this was a team in the NFC, I think people would be kind of waving the banner for this being a trap game. But it is a team in your division, and the Broncos right now would be a playoff team. Are you guys looking at this as a potential trap spot for Kansas City?
It's certainly been talked about, but I think you hit the magic word, divisional. It means a little bit more. Oh, and by the way, you guys are still undefeated, right? The Chiefs are the last remaining unbeaten team, and there's some pride that comes with that. And certainly, I would assume, something you guys are talking about is how good that Chiefs defense is, and now the offense getting a chance to show how good they actually are versus the top, you know, 5, 6, 7 defense in which the Broncos bring. So I would certainly call it that if it were an NFC team or even an AFC team that's not in the AFC West. But, you know, the rivalry, which is it still, although the Broncos did win one last year, that's there, and just that divisional history. So I don't believe it can be looked at for the trap game because of the divisional matchup. And you're undefeated, man. You play with some pride when you got a goose egg in the loose call, the loss column.
Right now, we're talking to Josh Dover here for a couple of more minutes. Let's talk about this Broncos defense. How real is this defense? How good is the Broncos defense?
Oh, it's real, man. It's very real. Their ability to stuff things up front and create lanes for all other pass rushers and run defenders to get there because Zach Allen is commanding so many double teams and so much attention, that is very real. What is not real is the second level at the linebacker position. That's where I think they can be exposed, where your tight ends can expose, work in the middle of the field. I've seen some of the pop pass stuff with Xavier Worthy. I'm worried about that with the linebacker chasing around. So that part's not real. The third layer, the safeties and corner, you know PS2 is the real deal. Riley Moss has been outstanding getting full-time duty as the opposite cornerback, and the Broncos should be getting back P.J. Locke. It was Devon Key last week, and that dude got burnt twice. He had two missed tackles on one touchdown play, so obviously an upgrade if Devon Key's not going to be out there and P.J. Locke will, so that side is very, very real. A little susceptible to middle-of-the-field stuff because of the tight ends, but that D-line is the real deal.
All right, last question here, Josh. You know we appreciate your time. Give me a path to the Broncos pulling off the upset. I think I can ask you this question because I watch every single Chiefs game. They're going to win this game. They're just not going to blow Denver out. They don't have the same punch that the Ravens do. Like, the Ravens can run you off the field. We saw that last week. You and I have seen the Chiefs enough to know that this game is going to be close in the fourth quarter, and Mahomes is going to make one more play than you guys, and you guys are probably going to be on the losing end. Give me the pathway to the Broncos pulling off the upset.
Well, you're right about that because the entire country was Baker Mayfield when they lost that coin toss.
Definitely.
On the other side, so I think you're right about what the game's going to be, man, because it's going to be close. Both defenses are really, really good. The pass, it's much easier said than done, and Sean Payton is who he is, so it's going to be even more difficult, is to control the clock and keep Patrick Mahomes off the field, which every team wants to go in and do, but let your defense make your defense work on the other end and make the Chiefs score with long drives so that your defense is rested. Go out there, control the clock by running the football. The problem is the head coach of the Denver Broncos' name is Sean Payton, and points he's allergic to running the football with any sort of consistency. So that's the way you do it. And maybe it's something where, like you said, unless the Chiefs are touching the ball last, if it is a tight kind of lower scoring game and you can get Will Lutz into a 60-yard field goal range and have a chance to get a walk-off win there, that's a pass. But it's controlling the clock and running the football, and that's why I'm worried about the Broncos' chances.
You know what, Josh, I usually like to poke a little fun at you, but you know what, man? You guys have been a lot of fun to watch. You guys have been a surprise. You guys would be in the postseason. I'll save the jokes for you until the end of the season when you guys find a way to blow it in the second half, but I don't have any right now for you.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you don't because I can't handle it right now. And the other part is that last game of the season, Broncos Chiefs will do it again. I know we'll be talking on my show or yours, and they're going to be wearing the throwback uniforms. I think I'm going to come with a different tone for that interview.
That is my guy, Josh Dover, joining us on the show today with Denver Sports 104.3. Josh, man, I appreciate you, bro.
Always good talking to you, C-Dot.
Absolutely. That is Josh Dover joining us on the show today. I do have a Broncos question to ask you guys. Chiefs fans, to me, don't seem worried about an Andy Reid game or the Chiefs being the Chiefs, so to speak. I'll explain more coming up on the other side. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into the show. I try not to speak for you guys or try to go inside your minds too much. That's the purpose of you can always call in and let me know how you think. 913-586-7965. Or you can text in too, whatever you want to do. That's all options are fine. The Chiefs, I would say, have kind of had a Chiefs loss in each of the last five seasons. So in 2019, they lost the Sunday night football game to the Colts. They also lost to Tennessee later on in the year. In 2020, they lost early in the season to the Raiders. You guys remember that was the game in which the Raiders drove the bus around the stadium. In 2021, they got beat 27-3 by the Tennessee Titans, and they fell to 3-4 on the season. In 2022, that was the loss to the Indianapolis Colts. You remember the one where they called that stupid penalty on Chris Jones, and he said something or didn't say something. I don't know what happened. And I guess last season, they lost 24-9 to the Denver Broncos. Like the Broncos just dominated the Chiefs in that game. My question is, do you guys feel like the Chiefs have kind of outgrown those losses? Because usually, they kind of have one of them every year. I would say maybe right now, where I'm, other than my feelings on Travis Kelce, is where I am maybe on the opposite side of Chiefs fans is, I think they're going to go 14-3 this season. I think they're losing one of the two games to the Broncos. I don't know which one, whether it's this one, whether it's the one at the end of the season because they don't need it or not. I think they're going to go 14-3. I think they're going to be the one seed, and if you lose three regular season games, put yourself in a really good situation to go win the Super Bowl. This, to me, kind of feels like one of the ones that they lose. I don't think this team is going undefeated. Maybe you have them going undefeated. I don't have them going undefeated. This kind of, to me, feels like one of the ones that you drop. But obviously, I could be wrong. They're the best team in the league, and they're at home against a team that they have a clear quarterback advantage, and I think they're just a more talented team than this Denver Broncos team. I am curious if Chiefs fans kind of feel like they have sort of overcome these any given Sunday type outcomes that have happened. Because every year they've kind of had at least one of those games, and it was kind of understood. I don't think there's any reason to overreact if those things happen. Sometimes you just lose. I make this reference all the time that fans always kind of pick their team to go 12-5 and then struggle to find the five losses for their team. Now, I get you're not picking against your team on an individual week-by-week basis, but what do you think their final record is going to be, and what teams do you think remaining on their schedule are capable of beating them? So to me, there's about three spots that to me seem like kind of good spots that they would probably lose. It's either one of the two games against the Broncos, it's next week against the Buffalo Bills, and they have that stretch there around Christmas where I think one of those teams gets you. This team is so banged up. Maybe they're not banged up at that point, but it's really hard to win three games in a 10-11-day span. It just feels like you go 2-1 in that stretch, and you're pretty happy with how that stretch kind of came out. So that's kind of where I am with this team. I am a little bit worried about this game. You guys know I come in here, and some weeks I'm pretty confident about the Chiefs. I think they're going to win. They obviously have the advantage in this game. I would pick them to win the game, but because they play so close to most of these teams and because the game is so close in the fourth quarter, maybe I just think eventually you just fall off the tightrope eventually. That's kind of what happened to Georgia in college football. Hey, if you kind of play down to these opponents enough, eventually you kind of get bit. The Chiefs have kind of danced with the devil, I would say, in the final 20 minutes of most of these games, that eventually you don't get the break. You don't get the big play. You don't get those things to happen. And I wonder if Denver is a capable enough team to kind of make the Chiefs pay for how close these games have been late.
So I don't disagree with your premise. The idea that they're like Georgia and that they've been playing with fire, although Patrick Mahomes in one-score games is like an insane win percentage. I'm looking up the stat real quick. But it's something where, like, if you think one-score games are 50-50 propositions, that's just not the case with Peyton Manning. With Patrick Mahomes. He has a 69% win percentage in one-score games. That is just absolutely outlandish. But even that, it's not 100%. So I'm with you. They seem like they've been, you know, flirting with disaster, walking the tightrope. They just haven't been burned yet. I think they will lose a game this year to a division opponent like that. But I think that game's the Chargers. I think the Chargers are better coached, better quarterback, and Jim Harbaugh is going to be able to scheme up enough stuff to get it where if they're in a one-score game with a more healthy Charger unit, I think the Chargers will be the one to get them. I like what your mindset is. I don't think you're wrong, but I think they're a 14-3 team, and the Chargers are the one that come in here and get them because I just don't think the Broncos have enough firepower. Like, last week got out of hand and out of hand fast. I understand that. The Broncos defense better than we saw last week. But 10 to 15 points, that's all I can kind of expect from the Broncos offense, especially against this Chiefs defense. So I think it's a race to 17 on Sunday, and I think in games where it's a race to 17, you always take Patrick Mahomes. So we agree, we just have picked a different spot where they could trip up.
Yeah, no, and that makes perfect sense. Someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, CDOT, why are you so stuck on the Chiefs losing on Sunday? I don't see them being worse than 15-2. I'm going to give you some stats here. Obviously not saying that Kansas City can't be that team, but just for a frame of reference, there have been seven teams in the history of the NFL that have won 15 or more games in a regular season, and the only time that the Patriots won 15 games was the year that they went undefeated in the regular season. So we saw some incredible Patriots teams over the course of 20 years. They had one season in which they won more than 15 games. It's just really, really hard to do. Now, that's not saying that the Chiefs can't do it, and they're halfway there to winning 15 games so far this season. So I'm picking them to win to go 14-3. If you got them going 15-2, I'm not going to fight you that hard about the one game. I just want, I guess, maybe to put into context is, I'm not going to say that we've taken the Chiefs winning for granted. That sounds a little harsh than how I mean it. Is, I think it is just, at some point, we are kind of stacking up some of the most improbable things that have happened in the history of the league. This team's going to win 3 Super Bowls. No team's ever done it before. They're also going to win 15 games in the season. Only 7 teams have done it before. And they're super banged up along the way. It's just stacking up a lot of just really, really difficult things to do all at one time. That's kind of why I've avoided the undefeated conversation. I think it's better for the Chiefs if they don't have to have that conversation. I think we saw at the end of last season, the best thing for the Chiefs was to not play the final week of the season. So I actually think them being undefeated is a negative team. They don't need Travis Kelce playing in the final Denver Broncos game. You know what the best thing for Travis Kelce would be, or the best thing for Hollywood Brown is? They don't have to play the final week of the season, and you give them 2 weeks off to get fresh and get ready. The best thing for Kareem Hunt would be is that you don't play that. The best game for Isaiah Pacheco. So I don't want the Chiefs to go undefeated. I don't think that's their best path to trying to win the Super Bowl with the amount of injuries that they have racked up over the course of the season.
Isn't the team you're kind of describing the 2020 team? Like, they had the one loss, but outside, I think the 2020 team outside of the Super Bowl was the best Chiefs team. The 2020 team was just incredible. I think what you're describing is what the 2020 Chiefs were. Hey, they got the one loss and it stunk against the Raiders at home, but they then played the no one cares game in week 17-18, and they were 15-2, or I guess it would be 14-2 back then, and they were the class of the NFL. I don't know this team is as good as that year's team, but what you're describing about stacking history is kind of what the 2020 team did, sans the three-peat part.
Yeah, someone said, what about the, yeah, no, you're right. That team could have probably went 15-1 too. So probably went 8 teams, though, over the history of the Nats. You're going to put them in the category. I'm certainly against it. And you know, I think that was the best team that the Chiefs have had. That's a really, really difficult thing to do, to win 15 games over the course of the regular season. So I feel pretty confident in 14-3, but I mean, we're talking about the best team in the AFC. These just seem like first world problems to me. Keep it right here. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. Let's talk a little bit about quarterbacks. We got a couple of first round picks going on Sunday. We'll talk about them next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.